philosophers in
space, 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 space.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
There is no such thing as Silicon Heaven.
Oh, then where do all the calculators go?
Uncertainty is inherently unsustainable. Eventually, everything either is or isn't.
Sparks happen. Yeah, she knows it's a multipass.
Hello and welcome to Philosophers in Space. This is episode number 14. And I'm Thomas, and I have watched The Good Place. I did it. I did what you made me do, Aaron. I've done it. I've paid my penance. Now, do I get to go to the afterlife for having done this good deed?
Well, I think the important question is, did The Good Place end up in Thomas's good place or not? What was the final score for The Good Place?
Well, okay, so I don't think the show started off quite as strongly as you did. So here's, I just want to, from the outset, I actually think we can do a good job of talking about this without spoiling it. So I just want to tell everybody, mm-hmm. we're not going to spoil like the season finale or anything like that. I don't think we need to. But I will say that the second season is by far way better for me. I really enjoyed the second season. And I will say maybe like, the final episode of the first season going into the second season. I really enjoyed that a lot more. The first season, again, like, I never disliked it. I just had, I watched like four episodes and was like, oh, okay, I'm chuckling here or there. It's kind of funny, but it wasn't blowing me away. But then after the first season ended and going into the second season, I really, really enjoyed it. So I do like the show. Everyone can get off my back. I don't think it started as strongly as Aaron thought. I think it was started a little.
Everyone could get off boring. Your back after the meme request that you posted saying that could someone make fun of this show for me?
poor, suffering white man. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, I was saying change my mind meme. That's all. I wasn't making fun of the show. Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. No, I really liked it. And especially the second season. And I love what's her name? Kristen Bell. I love her a lot. I'm a big fan. I'm also a big fan of Janet now.
Right. Season two, Janet. Right.
Yeah. Season two, Janet's pretty great. And I think Ted Danson does a great job too. And so it's a good show. Anyway, let's get to the content. Let's talk about, I guess let's go to our exposition zone to set up the key concepts that we want to discuss.
You're traveling through another dimension, beyond that which is known to podcasters. It is the middle ground between fair use and copyright infringement, between ordinary fanboying and meaningful analysis. It is the exposition zone.
So the premise of the show starts out with this character, this main character who has died, and she's in, quote-unquote, the good place is the name of it. And she talks to Ted Danson, who is some sort of architect of her afterlife. I think that's literally what he's called. He's an architect, right? Mm-hmm. And he has designed this neighborhood to be the perfect neighborhood for them to live in. And because she's in the good place, it's got frozen yogurt. That was one of the lines I laughed at from the first season, which is, humans just like frozen yogurt. I don't know what to tell you. Yep. And that's why there's so many frozen yogurt spots. And in terms of what we need to know, and I'll say a few things and then you add in anything that you think we need to know that I've left out. But basically, the conflict of the show is that it's a case of mistaken identity. So she's been delivered to the good place here, but it turns out that, and this is all in the first episode, so it's not spoilers or anything. Turns out they've got someone with the same name who was this saint and did all these saintly things and was an amazing person. And she's getting credit for that. So she's not where she's supposed to be. And that's the main conflict of how it's set up. So what other key things do you think we need to know?
Well, the conflicts get sort of amass together because everyone in this good place is paired together with a soulmate, and her soulmate in this good place is this other character, Chidi, right? Who this is the reason that I
love the show.
Love the show from the first 10 seconds of the show, right? Is one of the main characters is an ethics professor, and he's this hilarious, nerdy, uptightish kind of Kantian, great send up of ethics. And so he gets paired together with her. She immediately confesses to him, right, that she's not in the right place. And then it's a lot of internal.
Well, sort of. She confesses to the guy who appears to be a Buddhist monk taking a vow of silence. And that's who she confesses to at first, right? And then.
Well, it's both of them. I think on the first day, she says to Chidi, you know, you're a good person and my soulmate, and so you would never screw me over because here's what you need to know.
Oh, yeah, and she locks him in because he's an ethics professor.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of locked into that, not betraying her. And, you know, there is a lot of good philosophical references, which are actually accurate, unlike a lot of shows that try to reference stuff and do so in a clumsy way.
Yeah, definitely. The references are spot on throughout the entire course of the show, and they are super nerdy, and we'd love to, I think, at some point. We should just do an episode where we just, like, hear all of the things that the Chidi references at various points, and here's why it's a hilarious reference, maybe. But what's great is that it turns into a show about teaching ethics, that because they're paired together and she is this genuinely terrible person and, like, is completely self-aware, I think, of that terribleness. And then, like,
yeah, she's incredible. And it shows some flashbacks of her very, very selfish life, the way she lived.
Yeah. And so they want to try to help make her a better person, and wacky hijinks ensue, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's probably all we need.
That's a good
much.
Point. That's an important, part of it is that the idea of, can this ethics professor get her to be an actual good person, and then she'll deserve to be in the good place.
Right. What does it mean to deserve to be in the good place? Can you get better? Like, is this whole system problematic because it's predicated on this idea that at certain point you can't get better and that's the cutoff and we just judge you?
Yeah. Well, I'll leave you to set up the philosophy here, but for me, none of this afterlife stuff makes any sense. And it might have been a challenge of the show for me, because here's the thing, and actually I can set this up too, because in early on in the show they reference the bad place, and I know this is something that anyone could think of and has pointed out, but for me, if there were to be a good place, there can't be a bad place. It would be awful to have the knowledge that people are suffering eternally. That's incompatible with a good place to me already.
Okay, I see. You think that you're the kind of person who wouldn't want anyone to be suffering eternally, even people who might deserve it.
Yeah. Nobody deserve. No, you literally cannot deserve suffering eternally.
I understand what you are saying, but, like, you do understand that there are people who strongly disagree with you on that subject.
They're wrong.
I get that you think that they're wrong and that they're awful people. I think the premise of the show mostly agrees with you. I think Eleanor's sort of central ethical argument throughout the show is that this.
I'll put it this way: as long as the bad place exists, the show doesn't agree with me. But okay, go ahead.
No, because I think the show is ultimately going to be about burning this system to the ground for its injustice. Like, I think that's where the show is going. And I think that Eleanor, as she learns more ethics, is learning the language to make the argument she needs to make that she's been trying to make all along, which is this isn't fair, even though I don't. Maybe necessarily I'm not as good as these other people in the good place. I certainly don't deserve to be in the bad place. No one deserves to be in the bad place, which is, I think, what you're saying.
By the way, we don't have to go into it, but the medium place is one of my favorite parts of the show.
Right. Well, the medium place, yeah, the medium place is important. It's an important part of, like, this question of, like, the middle ground, much like I think purgatory becomes an interesting halfway solution within Christianity as a method to ameliorate the problems of hell as an eternal punishment.
Right. But if they did, then you wouldn't need hell at all. Anyway, well, let's get into the philosophy you wanted to get into. Mm-hmm. You know, set us up. Are we doing any thought experiments, or are you?
Well, I think we can get to some thought experiments. The topics that I wanted to start with in this first season, and I think we're going to do a couple seasons, you know, a couple topics of this show. We'll come back to it, like our other thing, like Star Trek and whatnot. Okay. I want to talk about justice and mercy, this central idea of what would it mean for the world to be just, or for a system to be just? Why do we want it to be just? How does that interact with ideas about mercy? Is mercy part of justice? These are these kinds of very broad, I think, but very important questions that play out in our judicial system that I think liberals especially have a hard time arguing or understanding sometimes, even though they're very concerned with it. Everyone, I think, everyone across the spectrum. I think these are what I find really interesting about justice and mercy is that I think we all kind of think about it every day because we are hardwired to be concerned about fairness. And so we're always looking for unfairnesses around us. And we're often very active as a culture and a species at calling those things out. But when we start to ask the question, what is justice and what is mercy, we quickly have a hard time explaining their relationship. So I mean, like, so I would start with a very basic question, right? You've been sort of railing against this worldview for the most part. Do you want, like, within the human world, a system of justice that actually punishes people proportional to their behavior?
Yeah, I think that's the key, though. That's, I mean, and to cut to the chase, sorry, I'll go back and answer your question. Mm-hmm. But the joke I have made, I forget when, but when I'm talking about hell or whatever, is like, after year 2000 of suffering eternally, I wonder, do the people think, oh, okay, I'll do better next time? Like, is it like, there's no purpose to it. It's like, it makes no sense. But anyway, that solves that issue. If we're talking about just on Earth, the purpose is you did a bad thing, you hurt somebody, you did something harmful. There's two sides of it, I think. There's some level of, as a system, as a, you know, as a society, we need to know that there are bad consequences for when you do bad things. So that would be the incentive kind of aspect of it. And then the other side would be some sort of rehabilitation or some sort of learning. And of course, the problem is it's not really how it works at all. How it works is we punish people for like in not really, in ways that don't really make sense for a lot of different things in our society, especially if you're an American. There's a lot of people who have a lot better systems than we do listening. But if you're an American, it makes no sense. I mean, we punish people for being addicted to stuff. We punish people, you know, and I'll even go so far as to say controversially, if someone's brain is just broken in a way such that they don't understand the consequences of their actions and they can do very bad things and hurt people, but their brains are just not right, somehow we think we need to punish them. Like, it's a good idea to really enact some revenge on them when, if, you know, if we had the technology to fix them, they wouldn't be a criminal. You know what I mean? So that's a long-winded answer, but I do think, I'll let you take it back over, but that's my long-winded answer to your short question.
No, it's a lot of good stuff. I think you're kind of exemplifying the liberal perspective of justice, which is you find punitive justice to be incoherent, partly because of a lot of factors that I often refer to as moral luck, which is, I think, another theme that shows up especially and strongly in season two of the show, and that you want to take all of those factors into account more. You're still willing to understand the purpose of justice for the sake of deterrence and for the sake of rehabilitation, but you don't see a need to punish people as a way of evening the scales, it seems like. Does that sound somewhat fair?
I think so. Yeah, I think especially when it comes to deterrence, I think there is a need for certain amounts of deterrence when it comes to crimes that don't, you know, pocketing $50 of someone else's money. It's not as though you've like wronged them in some horrifying way, but it's one of those things where like, if you knew you if there were no deterrents, if there you were not going to get away with it, or there would be no punishment whatsoever, I can imagine we'd all steal from Walmart a lot. Like, we'd just be like, well, you know, this is a stupid corporation that has a bazillion dollars. Like, what do I care? I'll just, you know, I need food. I need that. Like, mm-hmm. I think you would need some level of deterrence for that kind of crime. You know, that's not, it's not like it's a result of any pathology necessarily. It's just a, you know, it's just something where you need some consequences for certain crimes to stop people from doing them. But I don't think you can punish people, excessively just for the sake of deterrence.
Why not? You just, does it seem sort of basely wrong to you to do that?
Well, I think it's one of those questions of degree to me. I mean, we could set up a system, and if you studied it scientifically, I imagine there would be less theft if we chopped people's hands off for theft. Like, it would probably go down quite a bit. It might not go down completely because there would be people who are desperate or you know, mentally ill or something, but that would probably cut down on, you know, kids, you know, teenagers being teenagers, if there was that kind of severe consequence. But that is an immoral thing to do. It's too much of a punishment for that crime, in my opinion.
Right. In your opinion, I think that that is a plausible opinion. I just also find that there is the other argument that people will make, which is extreme deterrence for very extreme crimes make sense, and for some crimes that seem particularly heinous, we might think that truly extreme deterrents are valuable or justified. And so it becomes hard, I think, to draw the clear line between
that's, you know what, I just thought of it. Yeah. Though there's something that's so unsettling about that to me, and it is this. I think it's like it's almost mathematical. The more extreme you make a punishment, the more out of your mind you'd have to be to do that crime, and the less you deserve the punishment.
So this is where I think the concern becomes in your system, which is slanted very heavily towards mercy. It seems like mercy here in the sense of taking into account the factors that make one seem so insane or beyond their control in such a way that they shouldn't really be held morally accountable. It seems weird to hold them morally accountable. At the end of the day, is everyone going to end up in the middle place in your system?
Oh, probably.
And what is that? I mean, how do you square that?
If you're switching it to the afterlife, then you've made it incoherent. We were talking about something real, which is justice on this planet.
But
the afterlife, there's no purpose to the afterlife. Everything is, okay, your actions are already done. You've already done everything. There's no.
But let's assume a potential afterlife where you could be reincarnated, though, or something like that. But we can leave the afterlife aside for a second if you want to just talk about what my point I was trying to make is. I'm just trying to press you a little bit on the idea that if everyone is going to ultimately sort of crowd towards the middle in terms of all of these factors leading towards sort of moderate punishment for all things, how are you going to then get the thing you were saying earlier with, like, deterrence?
Any sort of deterrence.
Right, or making an effective system in any kind of way. It seems like all of the things sort of start to fall apart together.
The conflict for me on this is once you are in the realm of there's an all-knowing being designing afterlives, then the before life makes no sense. That's the conflict for me.
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to do is design an afterlife in a world where, in my opinion, there is no logical before life. Like, we would be patching on an afterlife to something that already doesn't make sense. I mean, and the analogy I would draw is, what if you and I are just designing AI? Would we do any of this? Like, would we design an AI life where there's an after AI life where we punish the AI if it did the thing we didn't want to? Like, no, that would be insane. You would never do that. You would just program it to act correctly.
I'm sympathetic to your view. I think
yeah, Mr. No Free Will. I'm surprised you're the one trying to push back.
Oh,
on
I'm just, you know, just trying to play both sides of the field for the sake of, you know, the people being entertained.
Right.
Hopefully. no, I mean I'm very sympathetic, and I think the show, like I said, I think the show is sympathetic to your perspective that this seems like a morally incoherent system from the get-go. And the more we talk about ethics in the show over the course of it, the more it seems to heighten that contrast. I think that's the great drama of the show. It's a beautiful critique of the problem of eternal afterlife of any sort.
I don't know that it's gotten that far yet. I agree that, and again, I'm trying not to spoil, but I agree that it might be headed in that direction. But for me, it's so nonsensical to begin with that even entertaining the notion is like, this is a joke.
Oh.
It's maybe one of the reasons I have a hard time getting into the show.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bad, we talk casually, like, I know the show has to do it, but it talks casually about eternal punishment and eternal torture, like as though that's some like casual thing you can say, oh, haha, The Bad Place. Like, no, that's pathologically insane.
That's the joke, though. Like being right. Casual about something so pathologically horrible.
No, but they're not even allowed to. Like it makes it hard because the characters aren't allowed to have a human normal reaction to it. So it makes it difficult for me. I think we talked a little bit about it. It makes it hard for me to get into the characters because they're not allowed to have the actual human reaction to this very abhorrent, disgusting thing.
What do you mean? Like, they don't have a nervous breakdown at the very thought of it?
Right. Yeah. Okay. The idea that there could be a good place where people know there's a bad place where people are being tormented forever. And they're like, okay, but I get frozen yogurt? Like, nobody would do that. Or if you did, there's something wrong with you and you probably should be in the bad place.
I do think that
I've led you off the rails.
I do think that there are people who would genuinely enjoy that, who would be happy to know that in that world, not only are the good people being rewarded, the bad people are being punished and in a very vicious kind of way. Like maybe you want them to be punished in a much more moderate and short-term kind of way, but I think that there are people who argue for a much more...
No, I don't think there's any... If we're talking afterlife, there's no reason for punishment whatsoever. There's no... It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense to you, but like some people... for some people, it's horrible to watch, you know, bad people in the world continue to be successful and rewarded and die happy after living a good life.
I agree.
And to know or... to find out that those people are paying for it in the next life is compelling and like, you know, as atheists.
Right. But as philosophers, we should understand that that's just wishful thinking. Like because you want something to be true does not make it at all true.
Sure. But just because it's wishful thinking is different from it being incoherent. Right.
Oh, no. I didn't say it's incoherent. I would say, well... What is incoherent to me is the idea that there's both an all-knowing being who would create an afterlife, but would also make this life not make any sense. That's what's incoherent to me.
But they believe in free will. That's their solution, is they think that...
Right. But I just want to clarify. Right. Like, I get if you were to accept the premise that we're in some sort of world that a god created, like, it's not incoherent to think that there should be punishment for people who are bad. It's not incoherent. I think it's just immoral to, in a world without free will, to want that sort of eternal suffering. I think that's incredibly horrible.
Do you believe in life without parole?
I would say for because this is where we get to specifics
here's an interesting question, right? Let me just sharpen this a little bit, right? You don't believe in an afterlife, clearly. Right. So for you, life without parole is the closest thing to eternal punishment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. But it's going back to what we always talk about when we talk about free will. It's not punishment. It's quarantine. That's the important part. If somebody is afflicted with a mental illness or something, you know, that makes them a violent pedophile, for example, we don't seem to to my knowledge, we don't seem to know how to fix that in someone. And so it's, for me, I know this is not how people work. For me, I don't, it's not as though I think there's any morality in just, you know, punishing that person, just like hurting them for their whole life. That makes no sense to me, because do you think they want to be a pedophile? Do you think if they could push a button that would say, end your horrible, you know, like desires, you don't think they would do that? Like if there's a pill to fix that, you don't think they'd be like, yeah, sure, make me just like everybody else, you know, like that. It doesn't make any sense. But life without parole for me would then just be, we can't fix this, but we can't have you hurting people. That's what it is for me.
Mm-hmm. The most maximally sort of merciful system that allows you to prevent them from harming others.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I get it. I am sympathetic to your view. I simply try to put myself into the mindset of people who would be thinking about what, you know, that guy who abused all of the gymnasts and stuff, and like thinking, you know, I really want that person to be locked up and throw away the key forever. And like,
yeah,
when they die and they have no other experiences. But between now and then, I want them to have no positive experiences.
Yeah, that's understandable. I think that person, you know, when your victims number in the hundreds, possibly, like, yeah, I mean, that's an extreme level of criminality, mm-hmm. of depravity. And I think that there's obviously it's a very human reaction for us to want punishment for people. And I get it. Like, I get where that comes from. I just think that if you take full stock of our situation on Earth and realize, and I think it's a useful thought experiment here we can, just for fun, we can enter the thought experience, the thought experiment machine.
Initiate thought experiment. Thought experiment online.
You know, imagine, once again, I think I've already alluded to it, but imagine that criminal, imagine the worst criminal, you know, there's people, serial killers just butcher people. It's awful. It's horrifying stuff. But again, imagine you have two options. You can sentence them to like just beatings for the rest of their life. Like just this hell on earth. They're going to be in jail and they're just going to get their ass kicked every day. Or alternatively, a doctor figures out that you can actually just fix the part of the brain that makes that person, like, mm-hmm. like with the brain tumor in the shooter in Texas, mm-hmm. or whatever, back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Like they figure out, oh, he actually just has a tumor that's knocking on a part of his brain that makes him just not able to control his violence to some degree. And, you know, you can pick apart the details of maybe there's some of it that's a tumor. Maybe there's some level if he was already not that great of a guy. But at any rate, if doctors invent a cure for whatever this thing is, you would be an asshole and a moron if you said, no, I'd rather do the beatings. Like, he should just do the beatings all his life. Like, let's not fix him. Let's not make him into not a horrible, depraved serial killer. Let's just opt for the punishment. Am I crazy?
No, I think that's a very well put thought experiment. I think you really, no, you nail the moral luck kind of stuff. And I think we definitely got to do a second episode on the show and do a season two, talk about how questions of free will can really reshape the issue of justice, and how I think the decline in the idea of retributive justice in the modern age can be strongly linked to our growing understanding of our own psychology, and how that has led to increasingly merciful systems of justice.
Well, I don't know, not in this country.
Yeah. You know, well, in some countries, I'm not saying universally, but there's been progress towards those ideas. And even within our country, even though it hasn't played out in our justice system very well, there's been a lot of academics and a lot of arguments being made for a move towards a different kind of system.
Yeah. Oh. I think some of the most interesting things to think about in our system in the US right now is things. Okay, so for certain violent crimes, I'm not sure about murder, so we'll not say murder, but from the studies I've heard people talk about, we even sentence people a lot longer than other countries for violent crimes, for like, you know, maybe an armed robbery or like some sort of attack or something like that. And that's one where it makes sense to me. Like, in my mind, if you're violent, if you hurt somebody, you ought to go to jail for a while, you know, depending on the severity. But what's interesting is even that might not even make sense. Like, based on some studies I've seen people talk about, it's like we sentence people for way longer for that kind of thing, and our crime rate, it doesn't go down. Like, it doesn't actually help. Mm-hmm. Because maybe because it's like the greatest philosopher of our time, which is The Onion. That's, I don't know why we even have a job. It's the best philosopher. It's the best anything. It's the one the where I think the headline is society amazed that 5 years in, you know, mm-hmm. incredibly stressful hell of prison didn't reform a felon or something like yeah. that. You know, just like the idea we sentence people to the worst possible experience ever, which, you know, I mentioned actually on opening arguments recently, like I work for the California Department of Corrections. I wasn't a prison guard or anything, but I worked in budgets, and I did a tour of a facility and stuff, and I talk to people and hear about it. You know, we're sentencing people to just almost hell on earth,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a lot of these cases. And yeah. the idea that we expect that's going to fix somebody who, you know, stole or something did some check fraud or something, like, hey, let's put you in the worst place ever and then you'll be better after that. It's a joke. I mean, it doesn't make people behave better. And that's the issue.
Yeah, it's weird, right? We all watched Shawshank Redemption on TBS 4 or 5 times, and like no one seems to have caught the key moral of that story, which is locking people up for 20 years just makes them anti-institutional, anti-social even more. So, yeah.
It's hard though, because you imagine, like, you know, if somebody does something to your loved ones, it's like, well, mm-hmm. I don't know that anything could stop me from just killing a person. You know, like if somebody were to hurt my daughter, you know, like I don't know that I would need to be restrained. You know, it doesn't mean the logical brain will persist in the case of something awful happens to you. But I mean, that's what we have society for.
To restrain you.
Yeah, exactly. To actually restrain me until the rage would subside if somebody were mm-hmm. to hurt my family.
To get a little philosophical again for a second. Another sort of thing that I find challenging is to really nail down the, like, if mercy is part of justice or a separate thing, because a lot of what we've said today sort of would lean towards the idea that being merciful is just a kind of being just, where that kind of being just takes into account a broad range of factors that mitigate our sense of how this person should actually be treated. The major sort of argument that I find somewhat compelling in opposition to that would be that it seems like justice is something that is demanded of us, that we have a moral obligation to enact justice and fairness and, you know, punish people as need be and exact tribute as need be. But mercy is something that is not obligated. It's something that's allowed. Mm. It's a moral thing to do, but is not demanded of us by morality, it seems like. So that might be one way in which they are subtly different kinds of things.
That's interesting. Yeah, this is a very, as feels very, what, Aristotelian or something? It's a very...
Yeah.
This feels like an old argument.
Yeah, it's... But
it's interesting to think about conceptually. I'd say, you know, like, pardon power definitely kind of goes along with that philosophy. Like, mm-hmm. justice is this normal thing, and then, you know, the president or governors can pardon, you know, if they feel like they don't have to, though. There's no reason they have to pardon someone for something, but they can. So it's kind of like that. That's sort of that philosophy.
Yeah, and the concern is that if they're separate things, there's the possibility of creating some sort of moral inconsistency. So a judge that is merciful and gives a person a lower sentence, and then a judge who is purely just but not merciful and gives the same kind of crime a higher sentence, it's weird to say that both of those things are just for some people. There would be a concern that justice demands consistency with regard to the punishment towards any specific crime.
That's interesting. I'm sympathetic to that argument. I feel like justice would deserve
mm-hmm.
or mandate consistency. I think it would be, you know, if I'm And we're seeing this right now in the world. We're seeing, you know, marijuana all of a sudden kind of decriminalized, but then black people are still serving way too long of sentences for possession and stuff like that. Like, that feels very unjust.
Yeah, I think that's the main concern with that kind of inconsistency. You wouldn't want inconsistencies that are based on things like race or other problematic factors. You might be able to accommodate a kind of justice pluralism where one judge might say, well, based on these mitigating circumstances, I'm going to give this person 6 months versus 2 months or something like that. So there could be some range within what we agree is acceptable, but outside of that range and only with regard to certain kinds of factors is that difference considered acceptable.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that this is like a lot of stuff in philosophy. I feel like this is a problem of incomplete information. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if we all knew, there's a couple things we could know. We could know what caused someone to do something criminal, you know, like whether it be that tumor or whether it just be the circumstances in their life. We could, if we knew how to just put an end to whatever that is, we would all do it. I feel like it would be insane not to. Or if we knew, like, you know, if we have some supercomputer that knows the right amount of punishment, that like if this person serves X months or years, they're not going to reoffend, or, you know, versus if you do less than that, that they might, you know, they didn't learn their lesson. If you do more than that, maybe it's excessive and it's, you know, it's not worth it. Like, you would never sentence to more than they would fix the problem or would make them learn or whatever, you know. Like, if we had all of that information, I just feel like the question we would all want to solve, I would think, would be, what's the correct amount to do, or what's the correct course of action to stop any future crime? I mean, for me, and that part, I get where you're coming from. Like, there's a lot of people who don't feel that way. Like, probably most people feel like they want there to be punishment for bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally get that feeling, but I also think that I don't think that it's the best way to do things. I think if we knew what punishment or what course of action would stop any future crime, and, you know, hypothetically we could eliminate crime by doing that, you know, like, that would be the better thing to do, not to continue to punish people because we feel good about punishing people.
So I'm curious, if that's really truly your view, what if you got data that found that really extreme punishment, really, really extreme punishment did, you know, did work out much, much better for society? Like,
no, I don't think that's possible.
Oh, so you just deny the hypothetical of that?
Well, yeah, I deny, because it was too broad. Okay. It was contradictory. Like, if your hypothetical is like, what if chopping off arms is better for everybody? It's like, I don't think you can just say that, because chopping off arms is really bad.
Well, so like, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that it sounds like you're comfortable saying, I'm a, you know, total utilitarian on this. Whatever produces the best consequences for society is fine with me, but only in part, because you think, and what's going to produce the best consequences for society is this very merciful rehabilitative model that I'm on board with.
But I don't know how to separate conceptually the problem of free will, though.
Okay.
Because that nobody deserves anything in like a certain way, you know, with no free will, like, nobody deserves anything. I know we have these emotions where we want to punish awful people, and I get it, because like it's visceral, and it, you know, it's just a human thing, but like, we don't have free will, so I don't, it's hard to imagine that excessive punishments could ever be better with that in mind, you know, like, it might also be better for society if you can construct a hypothetical where we just randomly punish people, you know, like, it'll just as just maybe just gets people to act better all the time. I don't know. But like, it doesn't, I think you aren't properly evaluating the consequences of how crappy that is.
What you just described shows up in a season one Star Trek episode. You remember that one? That's the pleasure planet, where they go to the planet where everyone's happy and sexy and stuff, and then you discover that they have these,
yeah, all the dudes are wearing really short shorts. Yep. It's I'm amazed that was, or no, it's not short. It's like the it's almost like the Borat, mm-hmm. like mannequin.
Oh, yeah, like the
man.
Yeah, like the yeah, full on banana.
It's startling.
Hammock.
Everybody go watch that. It's really, I can't believe that was on main network television. There's
And there are yeah. zones of punishment that randomly like move around. And if you commit a crime within those zones of punishment or something, you're like immediately put to death.
Even if the crime is like nothing, even if the crime is like you step on some hedges, you're just put to death.
Yeah, it's like wandering purge zones, basically.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but I think that again, studies have already shown that that you know we put people, our sentences are too long in the U.S. and it doesn't actually yield good results. So like again, that's a hard thing about hypotheticals. It's like, what if everything you think is the wrong thing? Like, okay, I can't really. It's not worthwhile for me to go down that road. I guess if we did a bunch of studies that said that, then you know, I'd have to adjust my beliefs accordingly. But anyway, we've got to go on to some After Dark. So any closing thoughts for the normies here?
No, I think that was good. And I mostly agree with you on pretty much all of this. I just wanted to at least try to do the best I could on the opposite side, like
just
a good philosopher.
Increase my blood pressure. I see.
But yeah.
And also, we've got a preview what's coming up next week. So what do we have, Aaron?
Oh, for next week, we're going to do another super forkin' awesome Q&A where we will take your questions from the episodes we've been doing or various other topics related to the things. And we will intersperse those with the names of our sponsors. And you'll get to hear my diffusing the bomb voice again as I carefully navigate each syllable.
Listening to the first Q&A is worth it just for that, by the way. Like, if it was nothing other than that, it's my favorite thing in the world is when... Oh. And the best thing, I've joked about it now, so now it's kind of, you've taken the tension out a little bit, but the best is before that, when Aaron was really as though he was diffusing a bomb trying to read these names. Like, he was just, I could feel the sweat on your brow. Like, I could just, I could hear it. It was
and
great.
The, on the
it's
personal scoreboard in my head for the good place that I want to get to, getting names wrong is a huge deduction.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, there's always more we can talk about on this. Yep. I do think we'll leave it for another day. But we've got to thank, as always, our top-tier patron. Eric is definitely probably mostly not a clone, I think. And if anybody else would like to be positive, well, as positive as you can get, that you're not a clone or a simulation, like 99% sure, plus or minus, you can go to patreon.com/0G, sign up for those levels. And also, everybody else, sign up for any level, and you'll hear our After Dark segment right now, which I will be very excited to get to. So that's it for this week, normies. We'll see you next time, or patrons, we'll see you very soon.
That's all for the main show, but if you'd like to go to patreon.com/0G, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
What do you think about this idea of a point system? Let's talk about the medium place.
Okay.
Because it's my favorite. That is one of my favorite characters. She's fucking hilarious.
The cocaine.
That actress. She really is. She's so good.
As the cheaty to your Eleanor, I'm just happy to see you growing as an individual. It's nice. It's pretty nice is so what I'm good. Saying.
You're basic.
This has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/0G. You can find us on Twitter at @0GPhilosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.